developmental stage, and also priority two on economic transformation and job creation. Specifically in terms of the strategic plan, we are looking at a number of key issues, Chair, on slide 21, a capable, ethical, and developmental state that in terms of our five-year targets, the outcome there is functional, efficient, and integrated government. The outcome indicators in that regard are monitoring reports with corrective measures where applicable per annum. And the focus is to ensure that we pay 100% of SMME within 30 days of receipt of invoice. And the second area is percentage elimination of fruitless and wasteful expenditure per annum. And here I want to emphasize that we have zero tolerance for fruitless, wasteful expenditure. That is why we are putting it upon us so that they actually don't have to experience this. On the next slide, we're looking at still continuing on this. The focus here, Chair, in outcome is support the creation of jobs through job summit commitments and the economic reconstruction and recovery plan, in particular, the mass employment stimulus. And we have identified two outcome indicators. The first one is number of jobs created and retained through job summit initiatives. And in that regard, we're looking at the 28,900 by 2023-24. In terms of companies facing economic distress supported, we're looking at 578. And in terms of workplace or future forum trade, we're looking at 1,774. The next outcome indicator is in relation to the number of SMEs and other enterprises supported to improve their competitiveness and sustainability, again, to preserve and create different jobs. And there we're looking at this three targets. In terms of SMEs, it's 8,108. In terms of which is a new indicator, that is entrepreneurs, workers and managers needed to promote the culture of productivity. We're looking at 7,878. And in terms of productivity champions, we're looking at 1,615. This is critical for the committee to know, because if you look at it, what we're saying is from 2019 up to 2023-24, this is looking at in terms of when you measure as it relates to our key problems. And I will quickly move to slide number 25 to just focus on the 2022-23 financial year. In terms of program one, the indicator there is monitoring reports with corrective measures where applicable, again, as indicated, settling accounts of SMEs within 30 days of receipt. And then, as I also indicated, which is critical to us, percentage elimination of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. In the next slide, chapter 10, still on program one, we're We're looking at capacitating our own employees, in particular productivity practitioners, to ensure that they're able to respond adequately to the demands of the economy, as well as the labor market in terms of training, to the extent that we would want to at least ensure that by the time the EF ends in March 2023, 100% of training interventions shall have commenced. In terms of program two on the next slide, we are looking at competitiveness improvement services, and there are two indicators there, the number of SMEs and other enterprises supported through the program. Our annual target is 1,252, and the number of entrepreneurs, workers, and capacitated to promote the culture of productivity, we're looking at 2,200. In the next slide, it's program three, the business turnaround and recovery program. We're looking at the number of jobs saved in companies facing economic distress. And here we want to save 3,350 jobs. In terms of the number of companies facing distress supported through the program, looking at 67. And in terms of number of workplace or future forum members trained and capacitated, we are looking at 101. In regards to program four, where we're dealing with a strategic objective based planning, monitoring and evaluation, we are looking at the number of research reports and publications on priority sectors published and disseminated. And for the financial year 2022-23, we're looking at four reports, and also in terms of number of statistical reports on productivity and competitiveness published, we're looking at two. And I think the chairperson has stressed the fact that in the first quarter, we will actually be publishing the Institute of Management Development Competitiveness Report, and we would encourage members of the portfolio committee to also join us. That would be around June, because then we'll be giving the country an indication of where we are as a country in terms of competitiveness. And if you look at the next slide, we're looking at corporate services. And here, the number of productivity awards and regional milestone workshops hosted. We're looking at hosting 10 in this financial year. And again, here, Chairperson, I want to emphasize that milestone events are important for us, because this is where we actually showcase what we would call some companies. That is, the companies that are doing well in terms of productivity and competitiveness. And we want to begin to say to South Africa, here is your model company that has participated in productivity SA programs, and we can showcase them anywhere in the world. It is the same companies that we submit for what we call the Africa Kaizen Awards. So it's important that members are aware of that, because some of the companies will be coming from the constituencies that you're serving, so that you're going to know there is this work happening, and to the extent that you should use in this regard. And then again, as we indicated, we want to populate the country with productivity champions. I want to emphasize, at the heart of our program is workplace collaboration and democratization. So it is our intention that at least we should have enough productivity champions countrywide, in particular targeting the 44 districts and 8 metros, so that we should have at least people who can work with us in supporting the productivity movement. I'm going to, Chairperson, with your permission, hand over to the CFO to deal with the budget as well as organizational risks. And then after the CFO, the Chairperson will come back to do the closing remarks. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CEO. Honorable Chair of the Portfolio Committee, honorable members, the Director General, Chairperson of Productivity and Board members, colleagues, good morning. I am presenting the budgets of the 2023 to 2025. Now, Chairperson, it is my understanding that the slides have been read, so I won't go into detail in terms of reading the numbers. However, just enough, I guess, to say that Productivity SA is not a very big entity if you look at the revenue that is generated. However, the mandate of the entity is not, it just doesn't match the numbers. If you look at the top parts of the budget presentation, the slides, by far, if you look at the BTNR, it has a problem. It contributes about 117, which is about 61% of the whole budget of Productivity SA. Now, the budget for the year is 192. We're moving to 199, and then in the next 3 years, it's 205. And I think one important point to mention here is if you can notice year on year, the move.
Are you done, CFO? Or are you...
It seems like, Chair, he's got a problem with his connection because he just disappeared.
Yes.
I'm just trying to establish with the CEO.
Can the CEO conclude on his behalf?
They are sitting together, Chair, in our office. I'm the one who's not with them. That's why I'm able to talk to you. I'm actually happy that...
You can try and call them, Prof. Or they are back.
Are we audible now?
We can hear you now.
Yeah.
Thanks, Chairperson, for assistance. I'm not sure where to start to restart, but I guess what is important to say is what I was mentioning here on this slide. It's just a reflection of our budget in the next 3 years. The numbers are not too big. We are about a 200 million entity in terms of revenue generation. Now, we don't only rely on revenue coming from the government. On our own as an entity, we do external consulting work to the tune of about 16, 17 million per annum. The next slide, Chairperson, is just a reflection of the same budgets, but broken down into different programs. We have four programs: administration, research and innovation, commercial improvement, as well as business turnaround and recovery. The one point that I had mentioned earlier on was the size of the BTNR compared to the total revenue. That if you look at it, it contributes about 60% of the total revenue that is generated as the entity. So by far, this is indeed our flagship as the entity. Chairperson, again, this is just our budget broken down in terms of the strategic objectives. Again, if I look at the material one, is the one looking to assisting all of enterprises facing economic distress and initiatives aimed at preventing job losses. Now, what we are doing on this slide, Chairperson, we are reflecting on the strategic risks of the company. So once in a year, the board as well as the executive team sit together in a workshop and reflect on strategic risk for the entity. The workshop is facilitated by internal audits, and here we're just sharing with the portfolio committee what we have identified for this year coming to an end as strategic risks. And obviously what is important, just the mitigating action plans that as management we put in place and we present to the board on a quarterly basis in terms of monitoring and evaluation of the mitigation actions. We have seven that we have identified, Chairperson, for the entity. Chairperson, that ends the slides. I will now take it back to the Chairperson of the Board. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Through you, Chair, I'll be very short so that we save you time. Chair, you've seen the slides, you've gone through the slides. Everybody has studied the situation, and having listened to the CEO and the CFO, you know, it just occurred to me, Chair, as the CEO was talking about productivity ambassadors, that perhaps one of the plans we should be having is honorable members of the portfolio committee themselves being productivity ambassadors and productivity champions. It's something you must think about, Chair, amongst yourselves, because we need as many soldiers as we can have in as many provinces as possible, given how scanty and how little representation we have in some of the provinces due to issues of funding. The one thing that is clear, Chair, is that when we talk about global competitiveness index or indices, South Africa, we've mentioned in the past, has been going down on this for the last 11 years. We used to be number 44. We're now number 62, and there's only 63 countries that are measured. So we are almost scraping the bottom in terms of global competitiveness, which means we are not competitive. And we keep saying where this must happen, and this will happen only when we get the things that we keep recommending when they get done. When we talk about inequality, I've mentioned we're the highest. When we talk about unemployment, we're amongst the highest. So we lead in all the unfortunate indices, Chair. And we are a very gifted nation, very talented people. There is no reason why we should deserve this kind of situation where our people continue to be poorer and poorer and have an issue with what they're going to eat next because we cannot create jobs. Our interventions at Productivity SA are key, extremely key. We know there are some changes that we hear about that are coming, but we haven't seen the blueprint from the department, so it's very difficult for us to say. All I can say is that we understand there must be budgetary cuts. Life sometimes presents you with things you cannot wish for. But we also need to understand, Chair, that there are parts of every machine that cannot be removed or reduced for things to function. And Productivity SA is one of those parts. You can have budgetary cuts everywhere, but you cannot go and cut that which enables you to be able to function. You can't do that. That one cannot be done. The interventions we require to do are very critical. We always get money on time from the department. We get money on time from the DTIC. But the monies that are meant for intervention, the big part of what we do, are always late. Right now, we had money being 5 months late. We could not pay SMMEs. We could not pay people on the ground. We can't keep the promises that we make to people. That's very bad for reliability. It's very bad for the brand that we carry and that we keep building. We've built as much as we can. We've done as much as we can ourselves. We cannot do more without getting this single source of funding we keep asking for. Because for us, we need to be looking at one point, that the Department of Employment and Labor gives us the money for everything we need. Where it collects it, whether it goes to the DTIC, it goes to the UIF, it goes to, it doesn't matter. It can collect that, but we must get this one source, Chair, because when that happens, we will start to make a difference in our beautiful country and make sure that the people who really matter on the ground are impacted positively, because we owe them a lot. I want to end there, Chair, and thank you for listening to us again, all of you honorable members.
Thank you, Prof. Thank you, CEO. Thank you, CFO, for your collective presentations. We will now allow honorable members to interface with the presentation, Prof. You can take your face off the screen and allow us to allow the members to interface with your presentations. Honorable members, here are the presentations. Can we invite hands? We've got Honorable Mdabe, Honorable Kondo. You can come, Solomon.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to the honorable members, the department, as well as the board members of Productivity SA. is always very encouraging and very good to listen to the board chair, Prof, when he does his presentation. And it shows the enthusiasm and the patriotism he has for this country. It's well appreciated. I have a few questions and clarity-seeking questions to the Prof as well as the CEO. On slide 15, red with slide 28, bullet point four and five. total number of liquidations increased by 46.2%. In which sectors were most affected, and what is the strategy, or what is the strategical intervention in resuscitating those sectors? Taking into account that the department has an extended mandate of employment, that would then be coupled with a slide that talks to the budget. This might require maybe the DG to respond to or make a comment on that. On business turnaround and recovery, the entity has about 117 million allocation. Now, is there a plan to focus on this extended mandate on employment to rethink and refocus the budget for the efficient and effective implementation of this extended mandate? The last point, Chair, does Productivity SA participate in the NEDLAC forums? I'm raising this in the context that the NEDLAC should be, among other functions that it should be doing, is to do a proper analysis of how are we structurally reform the economy, but at the same time preserve the existing and grow the jobs. So those are the key areas that I would really would want us to look at, so that we are able to meet this extended mandate. Thank you, Chair. My apologies for taking longer. But one last thing. In my constituency, which is in Gwadukuza, Ilembe District, I'm planning a meeting with the Chamber as well as the Development Agency. If maybe Productivity SA, once we finalize the logistics, would they be amenable to participate in those engagements? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Mdabe. Honorable Mkondo, followed by Honorable Yenan.
Thanks, Chair, for the opportunity. Good morning to you, Honorable members. The chairperson of the board, Professor Mdaba, and his team, and our guest chair. The macro environment on slide 15, it is very bad. Things are not good at all. But Chair, my question to Productivity SA is, we are given the challenges, or the bad things that we are faced with as a country. That was slide 15. On slide 22, they talk about the jobs and industrialization. I just want to find out, Chair, if the current economic policies of the country, according to their research that they are talking about on slide 29, are the current policies will be in a position to improve the productivity and competitiveness of this country, or some policies need to be amended or adjusted and so forth? And the second question is, the state, I know productivity and competitiveness is not about the state only. It's about the state, the social partners, and all that are involved, other stakeholders. But for now, I'm checking if the state has a capacity currently to do that industrialization and improve the productivity and competitiveness of this country. They also, I've forgotten the slide, talked about the productivity champions in the district and metros. How exactly are they going to do it? Because as it is now, their compensation of employees, a percentage in the budget, it looks very high. So how are they going to do it? Are they going to encourage districts and metros to hire people and allocate them in their compensation of employees budget, or they are going to hire as Productivity SA those champions and allocate them in the district? Or maybe have they looked at how can maybe the Department of Employment and Labor assist in making sure that in each and every district and the metro, there is a productivity champion? Because, Chair, the truth must be told. Very few people, even in our own government, are aware of what is Productivity SA all about, their purpose of existence. I think that is what they have to start. They must make sure that in those districts and metros, at least their purpose of existence is being understood by all the stakeholders and the industries and people that are meant to benefit from the existence of Productivity SA. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Mkhondo. Honourable Inanna.
Thanks, Chairperson, and good morning to the colleagues and to the department at large. Chairperson, in welcoming the presentation, and I just need to get a clarity by reconciling some of the aspects of the presentation that were given. The professor said that out of the 62 countries, we are far, far, far behind. We are the second country from the last that that has gone back to, in terms of the indexes. I just wanted to get a reconciliation of if South Africa or our country is one of the skilled, as you said, and competitive countries, why the number of the unemployed, as you highlighted, is 34.9? If we were that competitive, and who do have such skills. Why are we rating so bad in comparison to other to other countries? And if we are confronted by the problem of inequality and unemployment, what is it that we as a country, we are not doing very well? Because I find it very, very much contradictory that on one side we are that competitive and skillful, and yet when you look comparatively with other countries, we are having a very high rate of unemployment and a high rate of inequality. How do you bond this together so that we can get a clear indication what is it that we are doing? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Inanna. Thank you, Honorable members. Oh, there's additional hand. Honorable Zuma.
Thank you, Chairperson. Morning, Honorable Members, DG and the board members. Thank you about your presentation from the board members. Mine, it's too little. I just want to know from the board members that what is the productivity SA plans to ensure the improvement of the target that achieved? Secondly, what is the criteria to select those companies or cooperatives that should be funded, as much as we are aware that there are companies that are retrenched workers, some of them, they don't comply with SARS. Lastly, Productivity SA, has the new funding model plan been completed? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Honorable Zuma. Can we allow the team? Can we also request Honorable Member to take off their hands? That is Honorable Mkhondo and Honorable Inanna. Can we allow Prof, your team and the CEO and the CFO to respond?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair, for those very wide-ranging and comprehensive questions. We appreciate them. I'm going to ask the CEO and the CFO to come in first on the specific areas with that involve operational issues like numbers and so on, and the questions about sectors, which sectors it is, as the Honorable Mugabe asked, and then I'll come back after that. CEO, over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and Honorable Members, the question that was raised by Honorable Mugabe, we have just put the slide on the table that shows the areas that were mostly affected. It is important to understand that once you do not have your manufacturing sector, which includes agro-processing, doing badly, you're in trouble. So it's important also, as we talk about supporting industries, you will notice that the financing, insurance, real estate, and business services were also the hardest hit. So for us, it's about identify the productive sectors, intervene in those in order to save jobs, and at the same time prepare this sector to recover and create the more jobs that we require. And that is why, as the entity, it's important for committee members to know we are working with the DTIC in terms of the sector master plan, because we found it important that we should support the enterprises that have been identified as the priority sectors that has the multiplier effect. So it's critical that we intervene there. Regarding the same issues raised by Honorable Mugabe, regarding the employment mandate and reallocation of funds. The reality we are facing, Chair, is that the COVID pandemic has actually created more problems for us, as we are talking about a number of sectors being affected, affected companies shutting down, and therefore impacting on employment and all other related matters. Therefore, we are of the view that as the department is looking at the reconfiguration of the department, particularly to implement the expanded employment mandate, productivity assay should be at the center of that, because we believe it is through productivity growth that you can be able to improve the competitiveness as well as the sustainability of enterprises, and therefore sustainable growth for the economy. So we have made submissions in this regard to indicate that it's critical that as we embark on this journey, we put productivity at the center of all that we do. Yes, Honorable Mugabe, we do participate in the NEDLAC forums. There are committees that are established, one dealing with small enterprises. We are participating in that. We're also participating in the job summit processes, which talks to what to do in the event that the enterprises are facing economic distress. We are time and again invited to also table our reports at the Trade and Industry Chamber, because that's where we're able to engage broadly together with the DTIC, with the members of the chamber on the interventions as it relates to productivity interventions. Definitely regarding your invitation for us to participate in the meeting that you are planning, we will await your invitation. We'll provide you the details, my details, so that you can directly send the communication to my office, so that I can then plan accordingly that we have our team working with you. It's important at a planning level as well that you involve us, because then it helps to understand what are the issues, and then that we will be in a position to provide a comprehensive support as well as the support. Honorable Mkonto raised the issue around the current policies, whether they would be able to help us out of the situation, which was reflected in slide 15 in terms of the economic challenges that we are facing. Let's be honest. If you look at the countries, particularly when we do this competitiveness rankings, if you look at the top 10 countries that are doing well in terms of competitiveness, you'll find that all of them have a national productivity strategy that supports economic policies. We're far off as a country in terms of that. And that is why we're making this call, that it's important that as a country, we put productivity growth at the center of the issues that we do. What is encouraging is that in the economic reconstruction and recovery plan, we are now beginning to see some level of recognition of the role of productivity, say, and that is why in slide 6, the chairperson was giving an indication of what is it that we will be doing in terms of that plan, as well as the reimagining industrialization strategy. So we believe that we're at a starting point where there's beginning to be a recognition, but a lot still has to be done. We can't have the issues of productivity, growth, at the center of our macro economic policy with challenges. But we were also encouraged by the fact that the ILO has identified us as a country to work collaboratively with us to look at the issues of decent work and productivity. And we believe that with other international partners, we will be in a position to begin to craft appropriate responses to our policy challenges. You are further raising the question of whether the state has capacity to improve applied. I think the reason why we have this priority one, medium-term strategic framework priority one, is the recognition that the state does not have capability to effectively implement. And that is the reason why a number of measures are put into place to ensure that that improves. I must indicate we are currently working with the public service sector and the Department of Public Service and Administration to ensure that we help them with the productivity tools for purposes of intervention in government. And the plan is to further work with the School of Governance. The DPSA has committed that they will bring the School of Governance to the table so that we could intervene where it matters the most. We believe that if we empower the Department of Public Service and Administration with the tools, they can then be able to intervene broadly in government in terms of those sectors that are critical. Honorable Mkonto also raised the issue around productivity champions, how are we going to do that. The idea is, yes, the districts as well as the metros should actually take ownership of the productivity championship program. The district will be able to say to us, we need so much capacity in our space, we will be able to fund those and also take them into our various programs. I can cite an example. It's already happening in Limpopo, where the Department of Economic Development has allocated funding for the productivity champions, and they are employing these champions in some of their programs on enterprise development and support interventions. So we believe that, one, the numbers can increase because these are being trained by our productivity practitioners, as well as the partners that we have, like the ILO in terms of their SCORE program. We have also begun to intervene also in the clothing and textile sector. We have a partnership with them, and we're training productivity champions in that space. So the private sector is also coming to the table. There has just been an agreement with SASO, and they have committed to also funding this program so that we have sufficient productivity champions. It can never be enough if you are talking about 1.5 million small enterprises operating in the informal economy. We need much more capability. And that is why the chairperson was talking about let's look at how can we relook the funding model of productivity efforts so that we channel funding to where it matters the most. And I think that also deals with the issue raised by Honorable Zuma about whether we have finalized the funding model. The answer is no. The chairperson has indicated what we require is a single source funding, and also the aspect that government should broadly look at the government as a funder of first resort, and that funding should be linked to productivity outcomes. We have made these recommendations. We are hopeful that during the 2022-23 financial year, the department will give attention to this matter of the funding model for productivity SA. Going back to Honorable Hinana, I think perhaps you picked it wrong in terms of the macro analysis where we're talking about competitiveness ranking. Competitiveness ranking of South Africa is low, very poor. We're talking about 62 out of 64 countries. And where I showed the areas of problem. In almost all the four categories that have been measured for weak. So I think you can see the correlation. A low productivity growth and low competitiveness shows in a high unemployment rate and related factors like informality, inequality, and poverty. So that is the answer. It's not that South Africa is competitive, it's dismally competitive. And that shows in the other indicators that the chairperson has spoken about. Plans to improve targets. The targets can only, Honorable Zuma, the targets can only be increased if we have resources. Without resources, there is very little that we can do. However, in order to mitigate some of this, we are now engaging the private sector. As I'm talking about, Sasol has come to the table, and others we're talking to. We're also talking to the development funding agencies like your National Empowerment Fund. They are looking at mechanisms to fund some of our programs, in particular as it relates to the enterprises that are on their enterprise and supplier development programs. So we believe that with this approach, we can also be able to massify our interventions. We are also in discussion with the DTIC as well as the Department of Small Business Development to look at how collaboration in order to massify our interventions like the Workplace Challenge Program. Once this is embraced by the country, we believe that the targets can be increased or improved. You're right, the criteria for participation as it relates to the Business Turnaround and Recovery Program is that the company should be in good standing with SARS as well as the Unemployment Insurance Fund. It's a sad story that when a company is facing distress, we must be emphasizing this. Our hands are tied. We have tried to make recommendations in this regard. It has not been addressed. And in the 2021-22 financial year, towards the end of the financial year, we were having about 100 companies on our books. We could assist them because partly some of these challenges. So we will keep knocking at the door of government to relax some of these conditions, particularly for companies facing economic distress, so that we're able to assist them. I think I've covered the issue that has a flare of operational interventions. I think Chair, you could maybe touch on issues that I have not reflected on or expand on some of the issues.
Thank you, CEO. Thank you very much. Chair, in conclusion, because the CEO has covered a lot of the operational elements and indeed very important questions. And, you know, the issue of productivity is of such a nature, Chair, that, you know, I wish we had more time just to visit you as a portfolio committee. I'm very happy to set aside time to just go through every element you want for us to explain, because it's true that productivity SA is not well known, which is why we were excited when the chair, Honorable Lindelwa Dunjwa, a few meetings ago, asked us to demystify things and break things down and simplify them to explain what it is we do. And indeed, it is our responsibility to do that. We'll continue doing that because we understand the importance of simplicity for our people to understand what it is we are trying to do and what it is we do. I think having said that, though, Chair, you know, it is painful. You know, I thank Honorable Mdabe for complimenting us, some of us, for patriotism. But I have to also underscore how painful it is to be a patriot in this beautiful country of ours. It is painful. When you speak the truth, you become a very bad person. When you tell the truth, when you engage as a patriot, people want to give you the rules of patriotism. People want to give you the rules of how you must behave. And so it becomes difficult to tell the truth without getting into trouble. So some of us get into trouble every day for this truth that we are talking about now. And for me, I think it is absolutely critical. And I'm happy the CEO touched on what the Honorable Inanna raised. We are far from being competitive. And thank you, CEO, for correcting the 62 out of 64, not 62 out of 63. By the way, the 64th country, it used to be 63 countries, now it's 64. So we still have two before we scrape the bottom. But the fact of the matter is, there is no reason for us to be this uncompetitive. There isn't. Every time the slide that shows that the figures on our competitiveness index, we are given that every year. Every year we get it. And every year we share those numbers. 2 years ago, as the chair, I'm even given an opportunity in Switzerland by the people who compile this index to give certain books to certain people. One of the books I gifted to the president, President Ramaphosa, on his birthday. I never even got an acknowledgement that it was received in the office. I don't know where it ended up. But the fact of the matter is, I thought, you know, maybe the president needs to get a copy of this Global Competitiveness Index to see it for himself. Because I was hearing that at the presidency, they are working a lot with the ease of doing business being improved, which is very important, which is good as well. They wanted us to move, I think, from a position, I can't remember what position, to a position 80 or something. And I was saying, at the same time as you improve the index for ease of doing business, you need to start by improving the global competitive index. If you do that, it improves the ease of doing business. But if you improve the ease of doing business, it does not automatically improve the one of competitiveness. So when you look at the slide that is on there right now, we are told what to do. You know what is wrong. It's not magic. It's not hidden from you. It shows you where we are at number 60 out of 64. It shows you where we are 59 out of 64. It shows you where we are 63 out of 64. Education on that shows you we are 63 out of 64. How then do we hope to get better? We can't. We can't get better when we look like this. It is important for us to understand that we can change these things, colleagues. It is very difficult for me. When in terms of the act, I'm accountable to the minister. I have to see the minister at least once a year. It is difficult to see the minister. It is difficult to see the minister. Eventually, we were happy that the deputy minister was delegated to us about 2 weeks ago, and we had a very good meeting, an amazing meeting. But the fact of the matter is this, is that last year, March 2021, the minister, when we asked for single source funding, made promises to us as a board of Productivity SA, made promises of things that will happen. Nothing has happened. Nothing, zero has happened. And we are talking now, March 2022, a year later. When you ask, what have we done? Three and a half years ago, when the department was changed from the Department of Labor to the Department of Employment and Labor, we sent proposals, suggestions, recommendations of how you turn from a Ministry of Labor to a Ministry of Employment and Labor. We gave the way, we guided, we gave direction. But unfortunately, we become whining kids that are always complaining all the time, and you don't know what to do anymore. We hear rumors that something is being cooked. We hear rumors that something is being done 3 years later. But people are suffering. People are dying. The people we seek to serve are not doing right. People are not doing good. But we sit in our offices and talk about meetings we're going to have, and we move from meeting to meeting. This, for me, is unacceptable, colleagues. I'm sorry. It sounds that I'm emotional, but I am emotional. It makes me very emotional when we deal with issues where we know we are capable as the people of this country. We just need the political will to make things happen. We are very, very capable. And Productivity SA is very, very able and ready to do what it's meant to do. When you talk, Honorable Mdabe, about the structural flaws of this country, yes. We are structurally flawed. Our economy is flawed. We cannot proceed on the basis of doing the same things we've done in the past and hope for different outcomes. Sorry, we can see the unemployment figure is going up all the time. I leave for Geneva tonight, honorable comrades and colleagues of the portfolio committee. And I leave for Geneva, and I must share this with you, because on Friday, I intend to win as the first African DG of the ILO. And I'm going to win. I will win. No matter who says what, I'm going to win. But why am I going to win? I'm going to win for us, for Africa. And I'm going to come back to my country, no matter what my country's posture is currently towards some of us, so that maybe we can use different platforms, we can use different ways of showing people what is possible if we all put our collective shoulders to the wheel and did what we're supposed to do, instead of playing ego games and playing games that people don't understand, where we call each other things and we don't listen to each other. It is critical that we understand a lot of countries want to work with us. When the CEO talks about the ILO, he's talking about a program between Switzerland and the ILO. They want to work with us. They want to do things with us. They keep hoping we are going to come to the party, but we don't. But we don't. So I thank you, Chair, and I'm sorry to make you a little bit depressed, but there is hope and there is light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not an oncoming train if we just do the things we're supposed to do. We can make things happen in this country. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Prof. Thank you, Prof, for your incisive remarks, concluding remarks. But the point is that, Prof, I think on some of the critical matters that you've raised, it would have been helpful, those points that they could have been raised as part of your presentation. But nevertheless, we have noted them because they are matters of concern that need to be sorted out. Also, again, it's unfortunate that your departure to Switzerland should also be woven into the same issues. So we will speak and separate this on this understanding that the issues that you have raised relating to how you have reached agreement with the department, we have noted them, and I'm sure DG is also in the part of the meeting. We should be able to get a proper feedback. And then secondly, that we wish you all the best on your journey to Switzerland. As you correctly point out, that you are not going there to represent yourself, but to represent the country first and foremost. And when you attain the election, then you obviously would represent the global community. But more importantly, the interests that in fact reflect your background, which is the toiling masses of South Africa, of the continent, and the global south, including those countries that are worse off than we currently are. So in those few words, Prof, we say all the best. We conclude your presentation on the understanding that the issues that you have raised, we will follow them up, and then we will have a report for you when you're coming from the other side. All the best. Thanks, Prof. Thanks, CEO, and then CFO for your presentations. Honorable Yenana, I'm not sure whether you still want to raise an issue, because your hand is still up. Well, they are still here.
No. I have nothing else to add. Thank you very much.
Yes. Thanks. We have concluded with the presentation by the Productivity South Africa. DG, we will go to the next one. You said it's going to be the CCMA? CCMA, yes. We want to plead with presenters, DG, that they should also be mindful of the time. We will all again insist that it should not be the presentation, including all the responses, not be more than the time that we have taken so far. Yes, thanks. Director of CCMA, the floor is yours.
Good morning, Chairperson.
Morning, Director.
And good morning to the rest of the members. Chairperson, before I start, you do see my presentation on the screen.
Yes, we see your presentation. I hope everyone sees. If there is anyone who's having difficulties, please, honorable members, do indicate.
Yeah, I'm going to put it on slide mode, hoping that you can still see. You can see the slide mode.
Yes, Director.
Chairperson, I will be disciplined with time, as you pleaded with us to be mindful of the time. I will duly comply with that. I want to correct a mistake I made. I did not send the names of the team that supports me to the DG when he introduced us. It's not his fault, it's my fault. It's because we had a double booking, so my exco was busy with another meeting elsewhere. Now I have confirmation that they've joined the meeting. Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the...
You can introduce them. The record.
Okay. I have with me... let me just go to make sure that who's here. I have with me the manager, the senior manager in my office, Asanda Mgaga, who is joining us, Chairperson. And then I have Umthembeni Nqanana, who is the head of corporate services. He's an executive member in my team. I have Nkosi Khona Nkosi, who is the head of ICT, who's joining us. I have Uzanele Hlophe, who is the internal audit or the chief audit executive of the CCMA, who's joining us. I have Umaputi as well, who is the acting CFO, who's also present. That is my team, Chairperson, from what I can see in the list. And I will proceed then on the basis of that. Umaputi will assist us with regards to the, if necessary, on the application or the expenditure or the budget side of the presentation. So that concludes the introduction, Chairperson. I apologize, DG. This is what I ought to have sent to you before. I was not sure if the members will be able to join us on time because of the meeting that they were at. Let me then proceed, Chairperson, with the presentation. All right. Now, what you see, I will select the slides, like I said, that we present to save you time and to make sure that I stick to 20 minutes or so and then deal with the questions afterwards. With slide two, from the top, particularly bullet three, is what is important to note, that the 2022-2023 presentation we're making for the 2022-23 financial year is the third lap of our implementation of the five-year strategy. And remember, Chairperson, that our strategy is called Imvuselelo, the revival strategy, which concept we've explained to the portfolio committee when we presented the strategy. So the approach that we are taking is an approach that we ensure that not only is it consistent as we break it, sort of impact of this strategy. And I will just touch briefly on the issue of assessment, because it is contained in the strategic indicators that are contained in this presentation. Also of great importance, because we're talking about the performance plan first time, the third from the bottom of the same will present also to you, just as a refresher, but not talking to the content for time's sake, is that this 2223 APP has of 31 key performance indicators and targets is set for the 2223. And the background mandate, I'm not going to waste your time. That is settled. We know that. I'm going to talk to the content. We've done this when we did the strategy. These are the strategic pillars that members need to note: the optimization of the organization, and the enhancement of our labor market stability, which is actually born out of Chapter 1 of the Labor Relations Act in terms of the market stability and market in the labor market intervention programs, where this finds application, and the strategy implementation and governance, which is also finding its way into the program, the programs that I will just slide for you. In slide 11, these are the programs that I am continuously talking about. The members can note this has been presented, so these will not change, and they will always be there until the end of the strategy. You will then see the linkage, that of just what I spoke about. You link it with them. You also, our budget allocation will also be done in terms of these programs for purposes of example. See to slide 12 quickly. This is 12 and 13 chapters, and it's just an explanation of the program, so I will not take you into the content of that. For the sake of time, because we've done it before. So that will save us a lot of time. Slide 14. This is an important slide, which will always be there also in all the APPs of the different years, because as we do what we do, we have to always ensure that we create a link between the strategic pillars and also the programs and priorities of government. So that's why you see there the strategic intent. You've got five of those, and our strategic intent we spoke about, and then the priorities of government, which is sitting on the extreme right. So there's always been a focus, added focus for us as we do to make sure that we act within this province. And this APP that we're presenting is clear, that Chairperson. And then I'll proceed to slide 16 to 20. Honestly, of great importance in slide 16, I will not confirmation to you that they've developed our APP as we did with our strategic programs and our 5G. It was based on a report that you see that deals with the external situational analysis. It's always important to have this global and domestic view of the environment within which you operate. And this confirms to you that what we're presenting to you is based on this assessment and analysis collected. And you will see the headline of that, also confirming the unemployment rate, which I will talk to later in relation to job saving, and also confirms to you the second bullet from the top, that we are expecting an influx in case referrals, especially that we will be opening our offices from the 1st of May for walk-in, not the service, the walk-ins into our offices country. And having noted also that the President of the Republic has also eased the regulations and the restrictions that are imposed by the adjusted level one, and therefore it puts us at ease that we can open our doors, and anticipating that there's a possible ending of the disaster management status by the 15th of April, and having caused that adjusted to that code that has been issued, anticipating that a disaster will end on the 15th of April. And remember the commitment that the department always makes, that when the disaster management status ends, there has to be a regulation on how we behave. And that code seeks to do that quite effectively. So we have adapted and noted that, Chairperson. This is also the confirmation of that, and our perception in the public still health, but have that, and this unless that we did implement that we have largely senior commissioners. And of course, you'll see also the increase on the cases as in December 2021. It's noted there. I will not spend a lot of time here. But these are the facts that we present all the time in quarter, so we'll continue to do so. And this is a 5-year projection. Not projection, sorry, the historical data of the 5-year case referral in a comparative mode, 2016-2020-2021. Now, I'll do slide 21, very important slide. This slide also will be linked with slide 27, 34, and 36 in the discussion, but I will get to that in the calendar. So what you see there, Chairperson, is a data forecast that we make, because as we make programs or a target, it must have forecast that tells us what to expect, right? And we know that the unemployment rate is sitting at 34.9, and I'm glad with the presentation from productivity in this area, and also be an upward movement in terms of the expected unemployment rate to a projected 35.5%, which then made quite important for us to be able to have that forecast, which influences our targets. And then you will also note the big provinces, Gauteng, Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. These are the provinces that where we expect that there will be an increase in terms of cases. Now, in as far as, just note, Chairperson, those provinces are our big provinces at the CCMA. This slide needs to be also read with slide 27. If you look at slide 27, you will see in terms of, sorry, I will come back to that. Let me just go back to this. I'll come back to that so that I don't confuse you. Now, I want to proceed to the next slide. This is just a projection as we see that the caseload is expected to increase by 7%. That's the expectation as we do this program. And then let me proceed to, this is a past analysis that we did. Of great importance, we've noted, Chairperson, with keen interest. If you look at the increasing prices on food and other resources as a result of the Russia-Ukraine issue, with the increase of cases and all of that, and with the job-saving commitment that you will see, we're expecting, therefore, that that event will have a huge impact in terms of operational needs and operational requirements in as far as retrenchment is concerned. There is a concern about that because some of the companies might find it difficult to sustain and the cost of living is going up. So we have some discussion briefly about technology, Chairperson, and the ICT, and we've had a very interesting assessment there. And of course, in terms of legal, particularly in as far as the, the labor laws and amendments that I've just touched on, because some of those amendments are giving new jurisdiction to the CCMA to do certain cases. Of particular interest is the one that is with the harassment also, that some condescending eyeballing will now be seen as harassment. I think we're going to be very busy if you look at some of those and the need for training for arbitrators and all of that and judges. So that's our pastel status. So we're okay with that. We're okay with that. We've done the SWOT analysis, which is always necessary for us to do. I just wanted to note the following. Without looking at the strengths, because I think the strengths are okay, but if you look at the opportunities, maybe starting with the weaknesses, you will see, amongst other things, it's the lack of internal systems and on technological integration. This is a future, and this is very important. At this stage, if you look at also the opportunities that exist, you'll see that we need to leverage on technology. So when you look at the weaknesses and you look at our opportunities, there has to be that balance. And equally, if you look at the threat of that, you've got the threat of 4IR, and this has been a constant conversation. You will see also in our strategic risk register, in terms of our aging infrastructure, which is part of the threat that we should be noting there. So the SWOT is done, and the rest of the things in the SWOT, you know, but the financial constraint issue and the personnel, which is influenced by the financial issue, you know about all of those things, so I will not waste your time to talk about that. In terms of the measurements of performance, Chairperson, this is up to, I will not take you into detail in as far as this part of the presentation is concerned. I will just touch on number 1.3. Again, on the ICT project, it's important for us to do this integration of systems. It will really contribute a lot in terms of our performance. As you can see, in terms of the number of ICT projects in automation, we've targeted three in 2022, 2023, and the same in the year after. And that's an important aspect. And we've also noted that in terms of our human resources, the turnover of staff is an important issue, but as you can see that in terms of our resource plan, we hope to achieve 100% in terms of that. And I won't talk much in terms of this slide. Collective bargaining is always number one on the list and as far as the dispute of interest is concerned. And we're also talking number of the pre-bargaining conferences. This is just before the collective bargaining process starts that we make timeless interventions. So we've set targets in that regard. And also on the workplace relations, we've got special programs that we do, that are proactive, that we intervene in. And particularly if you look at the essential services role, you'll see in the first three quarters, the role of the essential services and the targets that we set now for 2022, 2023. So I'm not giving you detail on that. It's not different from, not much different from where we come from. In as far as the set targets are concerned. The presidential programs that we got from NEDLAC, Job Summit, we're performing very well in that regard. The tool that we've developed for business, it's working, and it's for small employers. It's working. So we're delivering on that. We'll continue to do so because it's a working target that improves workplace relations for smaller enterprises. These are the ones that are always there. So I want, there's nothing new there. We already know. There's nothing there. Critical to our targets also is our plan to achieve 100% in terms of our, you know, Section 73, which is the essential services targets, and all of that. The job saving, which I mentioned earlier, it's still there. We've increased it to 38% jobs to be saved on those that are facing retrenchment. We've always had excellent success in that target. So it's still there in terms of the current APP because of the situational analysis that we spoke about. So this is still necessary for us to do. So we will not give it up. Our governance is always there. The one issue that I needed it to be noted, what I raised earlier, is the assessment, the impact assessment. We will be conducting our impact assessments, as you can see. You can only do one because we are, like I said, we're in the third lap of our strategy. So we will be doing our Imvuselelo strategy impact assessment, which we do per annum. So that is in line with that. Other than that, you know, our appreciation of risk, you know, it's sitting at a target of 100% because that this is important. You'll see our strategic risk register, which is this one. You will see that, as I spoke about the ICT, at number two, you will see the outdated ICT systems is a serious concern for us. Chairperson, please note, if our aging infrastructure that has all our systems, including our case management, if it can crash or if it can collapse because of age, we will be doomed, Chairperson. I think members must note that. That's why it's hitting the right. In the red as a key risk, yeah. And we are really doing our best to do with what we've got at the moment. We are unable to get to our ideal, and remember also our system is not just our system; it's also linked with our 36 bargaining councils. So if that system collapses, the system of the bargaining councils will follow, and that will be a massive problem that we will face. So yeah, that's what is important to highlight, and the cyber attacks we touched on that. There's nothing else I will add. The rest are on Amber. On the resource, Chairperson, there isn't much of a difference from the current budget we're operating in and the budget that we are looking at now. You will see on the approved budget, we have R1 billion, basically. That's what we have. And you'll see the resource allocation of that under efficient and quality dispute resolutions. That's where cases are sitting. That's 733 million rand, and the enforcement of such services is sitting there. So that's very, very important. And then administration, where you find now the support services, is the second one, which is sitting at 207. That's where the allocation is. And then followed by the strategy management and governance, which is 35 million. So if you put those together from 207 to 35, it will give you the R1 billion of the resource allocation. And if you go into the next slide, these are the details. I won't take you through the audited outcome versus the audited budget, the midterm estimates. So I think this is the final detail. I don't think this will be an issue for members. If you want to ask about tax benefits or expenses, I'm sure the acting CFO can give you the detail of that. I'm giving you the macro position of our economic classification expenditure in the MTF. So that takes us to the summarized page with the initial grant in 2022-2023, it's 1 billion rand. And then the revised one, just a slight change, 1 billion and 51. And then with the additional grant of 40 million spread through the years. So that's basically where we are, Chairperson. This is the percentage increase that we get every year. So there's nothing really new. And noting, of course, that we've had additional funding that was given on the outflow from NEDLAC, which is about, it's debatable, it was 13 or 16. And then 3 million there and 1 million there from the department. So we've factored all of that into our program. What just needs to be noted, Chairperson, that the money from NEDLAC and the other additional amounts, because if it comes about Feb, March, you can't really spend it because of the timing. So I have abraced the DG on the impact of that. And we've agreed on what we're going to do to deal with the challenges that are brought by those interventions, which are good and highly appreciated. It's just that we need to find a way to protect them and to make sure that they are well spent as far as the current financial year and the year after. And Chairperson, and this is also coming at a time, and everybody knows this fact, that the DG of Treasury issued that letter based on the Concord judgment that has declared the regulations unconstitutional. And there's a revise or revision that is taking place about that. Therefore, it halted our expenditure on all programs from the 16th of Feb. And we could not even re-advertise where we could not procure because of that ruling. And we have had a discussion with the DG about that, on what our interventions might be, options of applying for exemptions. But because it's March, it's not going to help us because the procurement process takes much longer than that. So we've discussed that. So we are expecting that we will have money not spent because of that and the other factors which I've shared with the DG. But we're going to present our case to Treasury that we should continue to use that money because mostly it's not because the CCMA does not spend money or don't need money. We desperately do, but on what we've got because of those interventions, we won't be able to do so. But the purpose is it's a legal intervention, so we understand. So we have no issue with that, including the funding from NEDLAC. Its timing, we'll only get money now, and so we can't spend it in less than a week. So these are just factors, but we factored all of these for the current financial year and in terms of this expenditure that we're looking at on how we can strike a balance. So we'll make adaptations where we need to. Chairperson, I hope I did this on time. And I will not talk to the concluding remarks. I think they're quite straightforward. I've already touched on them. But we are doing well. And we think we will do well on this 22-23, despite all the challenges that are engulfing the country and those that are CCMA specific. Mandibulele, Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thanks, Director, for your presentation, which was well represented and covered all the key aspects of the commission. Can we invite honorable members hence?
That's Michael Bagram.
Honorable Bagram, Honorable Ndabe, Honorable Mkondo. Honorable Bagram, you can start, followed by Honorable Ndabe.
Thank you, Commissioner, and thank you very much for that interesting report. Just a few remarks, and maybe you can comment on it. I think most of the public are desperate for you to start inviting people off the street into your offices again. And that's probably why some of your numbers are down, because people are unable to refer disputes, and it's created a real problem. Let me know when all the offices will be open and welcoming people back in. The second thing is, obviously, the issue about the part-time commissioners, I think they're still on, I think they're entitled to 3 days per month, which creates a problem when you've got a part heard, that those commissioners then would only be able to hear you in a month's time. I know that some of your senior commissioners in the various regions are allowing the part-timers to come and hear the dispute completely instead of just keeping them to the 3 days. And then finally, maybe you can tell us how the figures have been, what has actually happened? Are those figures starting to come up again to pre-COVID figures, referral figures? I'd like to know where we stand, because one can imagine that there are a lot more real disputes out there. I know that on a few occasions I've had to refer disputes outside the CCMA to private agencies because we wanted to get quick dates and we wanted to have senior commissioners that we could then engage privately to hear a dispute that runs for 5 or 6 days. Your senior commissioners in the various regions aren't keen to give more than 2 days for any one dispute. So maybe you can comment on that. Thank you very much. But I really need to applaud the CCMA for pulling through these last 2 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Begra. Honorable Mugabe.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thanks to the Director for the well-presented annual performance plan. Let me first put a disclaimer into this that I should have maybe raised the issue I'm going to raise when the Director was presenting their strategic plan. Unfortunately, at the time, I did not have the information at my disposal. Director, do you have statistical information in relation to the disputes from the beneficiaries, stroke employees, or former employees of land redistribution and restitution? I'm raising this with an understanding that maybe the information I have is not properly documented or is not verified. I'm told that there's almost 9,000 job losses that has taken place in one of the districts in KZN for over a period of about 2 to 3 years. Take into account the socio-political nature of the business challenges that might exist from both the beneficiaries, including the CPUs or the trustees. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Ndabe, Honorable Mkhondo.
Thanks, Chair. I will first welcome the presentation from the Director. Chair, I will start with the infrastructure, the aging infrastructure. It's very worrisome. It's presented to us as a challenge, but I did not hear as to how can maybe the portfolio committee or the department intervene to prevent the foreseen catastrophe of it crashing and losing very important information and end up frustrating a lot of beneficiaries. I think we need today to be told as to exactly how is CCMA looking at this matter as how can they be assisted to make to prevent such a catastrophe. We cannot just pass when we are told that we are facing a possible crash of such an important system. Chair, there is a slide, I think it's slide 16, that talks about the situational analysis and the influx of case referrals. I would imagine it is during the COVID-19 era. But then, Chair, can we be told as to what is the exact nature of those referrals? Because there is the slide also talk about job losses. Are the job shedding activities, were they done within the ambit of the law? And how many employers retrenched workers, but they claimed for TERS? I know that TERS is in the UIF, but when the employees lay their complaints with CCMA, I think they explain as to exactly what has happened, or maybe the CCMA has a duty to research as to exactly what is the background of those job losses. I think I'm done. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honorable Mkhondo. Director and your team, can you respond? The floor is yours.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me respond. My team can add where necessary, especially in as far as the land redistribution one and the 9,000 job losses. I think we might need to get more information on that one. If Marius is aware, or any of my team members are aware, they can respond. Let me start with Honorable Member Michael Bagram's question. The first one was in relation to invitation to our offices. I can confirm to you, Honorable Bagram, that we have taken a decision that we will, of course, we will have to do it carefully with proper change management, because it's been 2 years almost. We are opening our offices on the 1st of May for walk-ins. You are correct. As our constant visitor also to our offices, you know that it's very difficult for people without technological, access to refer cases, because most of our platforms are digital. But you do have areas, especially in the far-flung areas and rural areas, and those that are unemployed due to different reasons, they find it difficult to access our offices. So we are responding to that. We've done all our assessments. We've considered vaccinations, all the regulations, requirements to make sure that we do so. So the plan is to reopen on the 1st of May. Do we expect case increases? Yes. Your assessment is absolutely correct, that the bigger part of our referrals really come with those that walk into our offices. Even those that can refer through, using emails and using our digital apps and everything else, they feel much better when they come to the office and they explain their story. I can say it without doubt, as you would have experienced as well, because some come to you, that sometimes, like a condemnation application, when you give somebody who's a construction worker or a domestic worker to give reasons why the application is late, and you give them a template. They just give you four or five lines that this is why my application is late. If you purely go on that, you might dismiss that application. But when you bring the same person, this has happened to me where I do cases, because I do cases as well, then she will tell you a story and explain to you. And sometimes they pull documents from their bags. And let me show you. This is Dr. Who gave me this certificate that I can't come to work and I was seriously ill, and he has a report. Whether it's dirty, whether it's with folded, it really doesn't matter. What matters is the information contained in that document. And when you read the document and you listen to the explanation she gives you, you then grant condemnation because it does satisfy and meet the requirements of law. But if you purely look at the documents you give them to email to you, you'll find that 90% of that information is not on the condemnation application that she does. You know, so it becomes a problem. What I've asked my commissioners to do when we look at such vulnerable sectors, as you can see on slide 22 and the most referring sectors there, right? You have to understand the sector, understand the people involved. That's why I'm not a fan of, these electronic referrals, the applications done online for certain categories of our vulnerable workers, because they are not telling the full story until you listen to them. So it has had happened a couple of times where what you see in the paper and what you see in reality is different, and you tend to grant that. The fact that somebody has not signed an affidavit must not make you to dismiss an application. You get it done. It's defective, yes, but correct. You admit it, and you deal with the substance in an inclusive way rather than exclusive way. This supports your argument, Mr. Bakrum, that opening of offices is absolutely crucial, and we've appreciated that. And that's why we feel safer and in a much better space now to open offices on the 1st of May. So we are already underway with the plans. We're engaging with our stakeholders to sensitize them. I'm going to hold a Facebook session where I invite everyone so I can explain how it's going to work and what steps must be taken, what it means, condemnation application that comes with it, pending cases, because there are some considerations we need to make, because if the case is late because somebody didn't have any access to any gadget or whatever, we've got to be objective within the spirit and purpose of the Constitution how we deal with it, because we've got to make rulings that are giving an opportunity for any party to be heard than the one that excludes them. So we're going to do that. I may have over-elaborated on it, but it's a very aspect we're very passionate about. Our original plan was open in April, but we were not ready by the time we got to April. We saw that the president is making some interventions and changes, so we wanted to have regard to those. So we're satisfied that this is the opportune time to do so. We're expecting queues, as we did the last time we opened last year. Sometime we tried to open offices, I think it was last year, if not year before last. The first day we opened, there were long queues in each and every one of our offices, and we're expecting the same. So you are spot on about that, and that's what we intend to do. The second part about the part-time commissioners, yes, you're also correct on this one. I want to say this clearly, that as we make decisions in allocation of cases, we always under fear that we might get a letter that reduces our budget again. And I know it may be wrong and unrealistic, but we've been very aggressively cautious on how we do this. We had to choose between two devils, underspending or overspending, because to achieve break-even is always difficult because of the way claims come and the way things happen. The decision we've taken to be aggressive on cost saving, including not doing certain conferences, not doing certain things, also reducing our cost in terms of part-time allocations, you only see the consequence of that later. And the savings we've created, because the threat we had last year, Mr. Bagram, in your question about part-time, is that when we reduced the case numbers, we saw that by the third quarter, we would run out of money. So we had to make an intervention. We had wide range of consultations with federations, unions, employers, explaining the circumstance and why. And we did calculations, we showed them. And we took that decision. And it was not a nice decision. It was not a good decision to make. So we've realized that we've managed to save. So we survived the fourth quarter that we're in. And we do have those savings that show, because it only shows 6 months later. You can't see it immediately. So now we have to deal with that. So we've increased the number of cases to part-time commissioners to answer the question directly. We have. In some cases, it's 100%, depending on the budget per province. So because there's provincial allocations and the case numbers are not the same in each and every province. Especially now in Feb and March, we've gone almost 100% to all the cases. But it is based on month-to-month assessment. But we are adopting the same cautious approach in this new budget. We have not gone 100%, purely out of caution, right? But we're above 10 cases to 15 cases per commissioner. So we've done relatively well. One of the risks I'm going to discuss with my team, and I hope I don't end up in over expenditure, because that's the most thing I'm afraid of. I'm being honest here. I don't want to spend money we don't have. I'd rather have a saving than have overspend, because overspend puts a strain on the fiscus. But savings, it doesn't. But we're hoping not to lose that money as we do, because we're not winning either way. So, but what I'm saying to you is that we're going to try to get to between 80-90% allocation to all our commissioners in all provinces and assess in 6 months if we're draining or not, or we're facing under expenditure, over expenditure, sorry. That is what the plan is. And it may vary from province to province, but that's the risk I want to take with my team. I will be advised by my experts in dispute resolution and finance whether we can. We can try to go 100%. I know that this question was raised when we did the budget approval, particularly Mr. Mkalipi. Mr. Mkalipi asked this question directly, that are we able to give 100% cases to our commissioners, because the concern was on service delivery. The concern was whether we're able to keep our commissioners busy that we appoint and also able to deal with the caseload. And the answer was no, at this stage we can't, but we've been increased significantly to that question of Mr. Mkalipi. So we dealt with that from government, but we're going to try to take that risk in the first 6 months and go for almost 80 or above allocation to part-time commissioners and then watch our expenditure versus the budget provincially and then make adjustments when necessary. So we will do so in as far as the part-time commissioner work is concerned. The pre-COVID numbers, yes, they are picking up, to give you a direct answer. As you can see, what we're projecting on the 17% increase that we are seeing there. Let me share with you also a very important statistic. Now that you're asking that, given that this is a 2022-2023 APP and budget, is that as of now, with regards to vaccinations, I know we have a special presentation on vaccinations. We are sitting with cases that have been referred to us, about 327, purely on vaccine, not any other case, just vaccinations. And these are the vaccinations before we even open our offices on the 1st of May. I can say without doubt that when we open our offices on the 1st of May, we are, even though there may be some that may be late because of the very issue, Mr. Bakram, you've raised, we're going to see longer queues, and portion of it, if not significant part of it, will be vaccinations because of the reasons I've explained. So the numbers of 327 purely on vaccinations, it's going to increase, and significantly so. And I
think. Mm-hmm. Yes.
My apologies, Chair, to interject. We seem to be losing a director. The volume is going deeper and deeper down. Thank you.
I'll increase. Sorry, I apologize. I'm on maximum. Maybe it's my voice. Can you hear me better?
Also, mind the time, Director, please.
No. Let me quickly do that. So we've done that. So you're gonna get those cases, and I think they will double if possible. And we appreciate the compliments also, Mr. Bakram. On the cases, as you're referring to, we would really like to have more detail on the 9,000 jobs losses you're referring to. You know, interestingly, when it comes to the land redistribution dispute, you will recall that there was an attempt made for CCMA to be involved in those cases. In fact, we are part of Chapter 3 of the Land Claims Bill. But subsequently, we were excluded. So we're no longer involved at all on such matters. But I will ask for more detail on these ones, unless Marius knows, and my team, I know, is checking as I'm talking, because that's why I bring a team, so that we can give quick responses on this 9,000 job losses issue. If my team has found something, they will speak when I finish now. If there's none, we'll definitely, with more detail, we'll definitely come back to you on those statistics. Honorable Mkhonto, on the infrastructure intervention, yes, it is true. Our infrastructure has aged and continues to age. The threat is there, as you can see from our strategic register. It's also affecting our efficiency currently on our system. So any intervention, even donations, because Treasury regulations allows us to, we are considering that as well, so that we can help. And I'll talk to DG about it on what is possible, that is within the rules that we can get. The influx of cases, as you can see on that slide, the sectors, they are there on slide 22, where the most referrals are coming. And the recommendation that says we must look at tailor-made solutions to those sectors so that we can deal with that. Are the job losses and retrenchment done in terms of law? Some of them are not. And some of them, we make decisions that the dismissal is unfair, substantive, or procedural. Some is pure issue that is fair, but we make interventions. That's why I spoke about the job losses intervention that we're making to prevent that. We've done exceptional. We've sent thousands of jobs there. So that is very helpful. On the TERS, I can't tell on the TERS relating to COVID. I think the department can assist us with that. But we can give statistics on TERS, on the normal TERS at the CCMA. Thank you, Chairperson. I hope I've answered the question. I know I've been all over elaborative in some of them, but I thought this is the best opportunity because it is a year thing to give that information. The rest of the information and the detail is contained in the slides. I did not go into detail to most of them to save time. But it's sitting there. But if there's anything else additional, Chairperson, you want me to, I'm sure you will avoid that, for me to elaborate on, I will. I will always welcome that. But if there's anything my team wishes to add, especially on the job losses, Maria, see if there is something or any of my team can add. But I don't think we will have that slide, given the nature of the case. But I'm asking Honorable Mdabe to share with us in more detail. We can definitely give you an answer in writing in that regard. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Chairperson.
Thank you, Director. Thanks for your responses and your presentation as well. There are no additional hands. We can then proceed to the next presentation, which is the NEDLAC. Yes, the NEDLAC. Yes. Thanks, DG. You can facilitate it to get your team into the platform. Oh, she's there.
I think she's already there, Chair. Thanks.
Yes. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. Is it still morning? Yes. Good morning, everyone.
Yes, good day.
DG has indicated, my name is Nobuntu Sibisi. I'm the Executive Manager for Programs Department within NEDLAC. I will be presenting on the NEDLAC APP as the Executive Director of NEDLAC, Ms. Silva Scalia. And Chair, I am as a Director of the CCMA and WG as well. I brought with me two members of the NEDLAC team, being Ms. Muiboni Mutele, who is Senior Manager at NEDLAC, responsible for IT communications as HR issues. And then I also have CFO, Mr. Thomas Moore, our CFO is currently on, he could not come to the meeting. So it's the three of us being in the person. Thank you. I'm trying to put a screen here, Chair. I realized earlier that while I was sharing, I put up a wrong process again. APP, there we go. Yes, I think that is the correct one, Chair. I will be mindful of time, Chairperson, and I will try to move as quickly as possible, however, covering the most important aspects as much as possible as well within my presentation. The slide outline, is it showing on your side, Chair? Firstly,
yes. Yes, it's showing.
Okay.
Any member who's got a problem will shout.
Will indicate. Thank you very much, Chair. So the presentation will cover a few aspects in relation to the recap on the strategic plan and theory of change at NEDLAC. And then we'll also focus on the APP and the indicators, as well as the budget for the 2022-23 financial year. Chair, we have not revised our strategic plan. The strategic plan that we are using is still the same that was revised in the 2020-21 financial year, and which puts NEDLAC on a new strategic path with a revised strategic, revised theory of change. I will touch quickly on the theory of change because it underpins the work that NEDLAC does and the strategic direction that we are following. And so, Chairperson, the APP is also linked to our strategic plan, and most of the indicators that we have in our 2022-23 financial year have not changed significantly. There are minor changes, but not significant changes to the APP of the 2022-23 financial year. And then, Chair, another highlight is that we have a budget of 59.8 million, and that has been restructured with focus to improve on our human resources and the capacity. So the P3 focuses going to build the safe, which is also referred to as the new normal society as we recover from COVID. We have a number of interventions that are linked to the COVID pandemic continuing since 2020, and we are continuing with those interventions in the 2022-23 financial year as well. And we will also be inputting on key policies and legislative issues, including the labor law, other structural reforms in rail and energy, and other policies that will be coming to NEDLAC tabled by government, as well as those issues that may come through the social partners as well. And Chair, we'll also be continuing to enable ongoing collaboration on identified areas to recover the economy in line with the economic restructuring and recovery plan. And another focus area for the 2022-23 financial year relates to enhancing the capacity of NEDLAC Secretariat and social partners, and also concluding the process of the governance task team to enhance a NEDLAC fit for purpose. And so what do I mean by that, Chairperson? I'm sure members of the Portfolio Committee will be asking themselves as to what exactly is it in terms of that governance testing. Just to elaborate a bit, in 2018, the Executive Council of NEDLAC established the governance task team with the view of looking at what is it that NEDLAC is doing currently, and are we aligned with the current operating environment of NEDLAC, as well as the demands of the country at large. And Chair, in this regard, established through the NEDLAC Act 35 of 1994, and is governed by that act, as well as the constitution of NEDLAC and the protocols of NEDLAC. And one of the issues that are covered in this regard, Chair, is in relation to the is, sorry, Chair, question is in relation to the funding documents which have not been revised or reviewed by the past team chairperson. So on the theory of change, the theory of change, it's got the immediate outcomes and the overall outcomes of NEDLAC and linked to the impact that we want to achieve. And Chair, NEDLAC is divided into three. There's program one, which focuses on administration, and that covers the IT, the communications, human resources, and facilities management as well. In this regard, Chairperson, the intermediate outcomes linked to NEDLAC that should account for the use of its financial resources and staff are productive, governance is effective and efficient, monitoring and evaluation process that enables effective decision-making at NEDLAC. And Chairperson, on program two, this is the program that has got four thematic areas on economic, labor, fiscal, and financial issues, as well as social and development issues. In this regard, the intermediate outcomes linked to social dialogues that are convened and effective, and agreements or social compacts are negotiated and concluded at NEDLAC, and also the dialogue processes that are enabled and also being effective. And then the program three, Chair, is in relation to capacity building of constituencies. And this talks to the constituencies having the necessary tools of trade to engage effectively within NEDLAC, and also that they have technical assistance to engage effectively at NEDLAC, and also having training to the social partners in order to build their capacity. And linked to those intermediate outcomes is the outcomes that are basically three of them. One being an effective, that is, NEDLAC is an effective and accountable institution. And also the second one linked to having the leaders of business, community, government and labor constituencies collaborating to address relevant and important social and economic issues. And the third outcome, the Chair, is in relation to the capacity of social partners to engage and negotiate on social and economic issues, which is continuously engaged and enhanced. And the overall impact, Chair, there being to ensure that to ensure that the social partners contribute to meaningful processes and address the economic issues and social issues that are facing the country. The next slide, Chair, dips into the programs of NEDLAC and the outcomes and the indicators that we have. With the first one talking to program one, which is the administration program, that focuses on the first outcome focuses on that NEDLAC accounts for the use of its financial resources. And in that regard, Chair, the indicator links to the unqualified audit opinion that should be obtained at the end of the financial year. And then the second point on the outcomes is in relation to NEDLAC being an effective organization. And there is that we will be conducting annual stakeholder satisfaction surveys. And out of those surveys, we would the yardsticks for us to measure that NEDLAC indeed is efficient is that we are expecting not less than 75% of positive responses that are received from that annual stakeholder satisfaction survey. And the third outcome, Chairperson, linked to our strategic plan, is a well-managed facilities within NEDLAC. And this focuses both on the IT as well as the NEDLAC building to ensure that 90% of our facilities management plan is implemented and 100% of IT complaints resolved within the agreed time frames. And Chairperson, I'd like to also emphasize the last part around the IT complaints, that since the onset of COVID in 2020, NEDLAC has moved to the remote working, and staff go to the office on an as and needed basis, and all our social partners are also attending meetings remotely. So this is very important to ensure that we don't get any technical glitches and that the staff can be able to function effectively and that social dialogue can be enhanced without being adversely affected by the technological challenges. So hence we have that bold a target or indicator in relation to IT complaints that 100% of them should be resolved within the agreed timeframes. And Chair, the next part talks to the staff developed through training interventions. And here, Chairperson, the plan in our APP is that 80% of our training budget should be spent. And that is, again, linked to enhancing the capacity of the NEDLAC Secretariat to be able to address them and facilitate social dialogue meaningfully, and that we can be able to realize the mandate of NEDLAC. And the next point is in relation to procurement processes that we planned that they should be completed within the set time frames. And in this regard, about 100% also of contracts awarded to suppliers has to be done within 2 months of the closing date of the advert. And this is also to ensure that all of our procurement processes and the service delivery is undertaken without the delays that could arise from the not awarding of suppliers or of contracts and things like that. So and the next point still within the administration program chair, which is program one, is on the governance, that governance is effective. And again, linked to this outcome is that 80% of milestones that are set in terms of the governance task team processes are achieved. And then the last one in relation to this program talks to the monitoring and evaluation processes that enable effective decision making. And in this regard, Chair, we will be looking at legislative and policy tracker report that must be delivered twice per year to the governance structures. Chair, moving on in terms of our APP is program two, and this talks to the core operations of NEDLAC, or which is also referred to as the program's unit or department. And Chairperson, in this regard, we have the point that social dialogues are successfully convened. And in this regard, we aim to have 100% of dialogue reports released within 4 years, also ensure that whatever resolutions were agreed in those dialogue sessions, they can be timeously implemented. And the next issue talks to the agreements on social compacts are negotiated and successfully concluded. And here, Chair, the target is that 75% of agreements are successfully concluded within 9 months of the issues being tabled at NEDLAC, unless there has been a different agreement by the social partners. And lastly, Chair, in the slide, is that processes are successfully concluded and coordinated. And in this regard, we aim to have 100% of reports concluded within 6 months of the issues being tabled at NEDLAC, and also that 100% of Section 77 standing committee reports are concluded within 5 days of the resolution of the matter. And Chair, these two targets talk to, as you would know, that NEDLAC engages on the policy or legislative issues that are tabled at NEDLAC, and with the target that at least a maximum of 6 months, that from the date a matter has been tabled at NEDLAC, it's got to be concluded within 6 months. And also in relation to Section 77 issues, those are the issues that would be tabled by the labor trade unions that on the issues pertaining to socio-economic issues, and that once a resolution has been made by the standing committee on that matter, which would have been tabled by a trade union, a report should be concluded within 5 working days, five working days. I see here, Chair, that the table says 5 days. It's actually 5 working days of the resolution of the matter. So that is what those targets are about on program two. And the last program, Chairperson, is the capacity building program three. and that purely talks to the capacitation of constituencies, and 70% of the planned constituency capacity building interventions have to be finalized or completed within that financial year. And this is to ensure that constituencies are adequately capacitated to effectively engage on the issues that would be on the table at NEDLAC. And that would be through the tools of trade provided to them, that would be through the training that would be provided to them, and that would also be through the technical resources, for example, if they need a legal advice that on a certain matter, then that can be procured for social partners. And lastly, Chair, it's not the last part, it's still on budget and revenue for NEDLAC. We have an allocation for the 2022-23 financial year received from the Department of Employment and Labour of 58 million. And the other income there is coming from the interest that we get from our current account, and that is 909,000. And therefore, that makes a total revenue of 59 million. And then on the expenditure for planned expenditure for 2022-23 is that 32 million of that allocated budget will be directed towards the compensation of employees, and then 27 million will be towards goods and services. And the breakdown according to the three programs that are outlined earlier is that program one is allocated 45 million, program 2, 7 million, as well as program 3, is 7 million. And, Chair, the highlight in terms of our budget really is that there has been a significant shift on the budget, which is directed towards building the capacity of the institution and increasing the number of senior staff members so that NEDLAC can coordinate the complex processes and supportive governance structures, or rather supportive governance, human resources, and the IT and VAT realignment, is that there has been an increase of 12% to the COE on our budget. And also, before COVID, a significant amount of our budget went to travel and accommodation for social partners, as they would have to come to NEDLAC to attend the meetings. However, as we have embarked on the online meetings, there has been a significant reduction on travel and accommodation on our budget. And Chair, the capacity building budget also of constituencies has been increased by 59%, which is to enhance that capacitation of social partners, and that they can be able to get the required interventions, as I outlined earlier, on training, tools of trade, and technical assistance. And that, Chair, brings us to the end of our slide. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Nabundu, for your presentation. There's the presentation, honorable members. Any questions? Honorable Mdabe?
Thank you very much, honorable Chair, and thanks to NEDLAC's presentation. Just one point on slide 5, bullet point 4, policies and laws to address the needed structural reforms in the rail and energy sectors. My question, Chair, is not related to the specific two entities that have been, or departments that have been raised here. It's in relation to the Constitutional Court outcome in relation to preferential procurement regulation, as well as promulgated by the Minister of Finance. I think it was in November last year, if my memory serves me well. Has NEDLAC looked into the matter? If yes, how far they have then dealt with it, and looking to the issue of the transformative nature of our economy. If the matter has not been addressed, is there a plan to then engage on it? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Ndabe. It's only your hand that is here. Can we get a response from NEDLAC?
Thank you, Chair. Apologies. I think there was a cutting on my side. I heard the question is in relation to the what NEDLAC is doing on the case, but I couldn't get the details. If possible, I would appreciate if Honorable Mdabe can or you, Chairperson, can assist with clarity on that question. Thanks.
Honorable Mdabe, can you repeat yourself?
It's in relation to slide 5 on the matters that relate to policies and laws to address the needed structural reforms. But this refers to rail and energy. My take is in relation to the economy at large, but specifically to the preferential procurement regulation that was promulgated by the then Minister of Finance, I think it was in November 2020 or 2019. Then the matter was taken to court, and then it went to the Supreme Court of Appeal, and then the Constitutional Court made a judgment and findings on the matter on the, I think it was in February this year. And then NEDLAC looked into this matter due to its transformative nature, that it has to be part of the economic recovery and reconstruction plan. Thank you, Chair.
Have you got the question, Nabundu?
Yes, yes, Chair. It's been much appreciated. I did get the question. Okay.
Thank you. You can proceed.
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson. And Honorable Mdabe, thank you for your question in relation to the preferential procurement regulations. And Chair, indeed, the matter on preferential procurement is an important matter within NEDLAC and part of the in terms of the economic recovery action plan, the number of issues which need to be addressed. Of this, Chairperson, I wouldn't say we've dealt directly with the judgment in its own, but the issue on ensuring that there is I would say, Chair, it's linked to the public procurement, which the Minister of Finance has committed to tabling that at NEDLAC. It is not yet tabled, Chair, for engagement at NEDLAC, but it's something that is within the cards for consideration as soon as it is tabled at NEDLAC. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Nambundo. We unfortunately using your name, not your designation.
Problem. Not a problem.
That's the consequence of being given a name. There is no other hand for you, NEDLAC, Nabundu. I think the questions cover your presentation. Honorable members, we have exhausted or come to an end of our presentation. I think I should call DG. But I need to be clarified. On the platform, I see a name which is closer to that of Deputy Minister. But I have an apology. So I wasn't sure. I didn't want to jump the gun and acknowledge Deputy Minister. There's Buitumelo R on the platform. But in my understanding, it's not the Deputy Minister. But DG, can we allow you to make some remarks on the presentations made?
Thank you, Chair, and the honourable members. Just on the last point, Chair, that was raised with regards to the preferential procurement regulations, just to indicate to the committee that National Treasury has moved swiftly, and they did two things. One, they wrote to the Constitutional Court and asked the court to explain certain aspects of the judgment. And the second one is that they are busy with effecting amendments to the regulation to address the issues that were raised by the Pretoria High Court and the Supreme Court of Appeal and ultimately the Constitutional Court. So they are busy working on those on those regulations. And then there was an issue raised by Productivity South Africa around the issue of a single source of funding. And this is a matter that, and they know very well, Chair, that it's a matter that we've been handling with them. And it's not an easy matter because I cannot just simply say to UIF, please send money and deposit it in the account of the department. We have a different accounting process that we need to follow. So it's not an easy matter, and we're trying to find the best way of assisting the entity so that it meets its financial obligations. And so we'll continue to do so. But the entity has got to also look at how, I think, Honorable Mkhonto, and if I'm not mistaken, about the compensation of employees. And if you look at just one program, which is the business turnaround and recovery, so you have a budget of 117, and 40% of that goes to the compensation of employees. And that's the money allocated for making impact in terms of assisting companies to turn around. So if you spend 40% of it paying people rather than doing what you're supposed to do, that presents us with a challenge. So we've got to be able to manage our resources much better, so that we can have an impact in what we do. Other than that, Chair, we continue to work closely with our entities, and whenever there are issues, we stand ready to assist them. Thank you very much, Chair, and the honourable members.
Thank you, DG, for your input and clarities on the points and submissions. Honourable members, there are no new hands on the platform, and in this at this moment, I wish to extend a word of sincere thanks to you for your participation, but also to remind you that we still have two outstanding entities that must present, which a notice will come indicating the presentations by the Compensation Fund and the Unemployment Insurance Fund, the UIF. So those are the two outstanding entities that are still to present their annual performance plans, meaning that we would, as we have done, be ready for next week so that we ensure that by the time we close the month, at least we have concluded with our area of annual performance plans. Having said that, I want to thank you all. Thank you, DG, and your team. All of them who have presented, we say thanks a lot. And we also want to thank the members and all our guests for having made this moment a successful one. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Those who are attending.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks. Bolo Mauno Lingo.
Bolo Bramme.
Good, then.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Good.
Molo, DG.
No, the Bumi, the Bumdaf.
Thank you.